Welcome to San Francisco Ballet's Meet the Artist. My name is Catherine Barkman, and I'm a soloist at San Francisco Ballet. This podcast series of Meet the Artist interviews is your chance to get to know us, the dancers, musicians, designers, and choreographers at SF Ballet, as we discuss our lives, the process in the studio, performances on stage, and more. Join us for Meet the Artist interviews live and in person in the Opera House before Friday and Sunday performances. Or tune in all season long to hear podcast recordings of San Francisco Ballet's Meet the Artist interviews. Enjoy!
Welcome to San Francisco Ballet's Meet the Artist interview at the War Memorial Opera House. My name is Claire Sheridan. I'm your host for this event, and it's my pleasure to introduce our guest today. Folks, please join me in welcoming San Francisco Ballet rehearsal director and former principal dancer, the legendary, award-winning, and much-loved Tina LeBlanc.
Thank you.
After 10 years at the Joffrey Ballet in New York, Tina joined the San Francisco Ballet in 1992, dancing the lead in full-length works like The Sleeping Beauty, Romeo and Juliet, and Giselle, and performing a multitude of other ballets by world-famous choreographers. She taught at the San Francisco Ballet School, and then in 2019, Tina became a rehearsal director, which we'll talk about in a minute. But first, I'd like to start with a question from some kids in my neighborhood. Inquiring minds want to know, Tina, is being a professional ballet dancer glamorous and exciting? They think the answer is yes.
I'd have to say it can be. It can be really fun. I mean, it's also a lot of hard work, as you might suspect. Long hours in the studio. A lot of body pain. it's a lot of work, but it can be a lot of fun.
Now, as far as when you stepped on the stage as Aurora in Sleeping Beauty, and there's this beautiful set and your beautiful costume, and in this theater with 3,000 people looking at you, I think that's pretty glamorous.
You try not to think about all those eyes.
How old were you when you started dancing?
I was 3 when I started, as much as a 3-year-old can do. 1 hour a week, half ballet, half tap. And I was put into ballet because I wanted to be like my older sister, who had started at 3, as did my younger sister.
But with all the ballet experience and expertise you have acquired, what do you know now that you wish you had known as a young dancer just starting out your career?
There's no such thing as perfection. To be open and always striving for more, but not, you have to give yourself a break. That it goes up and down. You have good shows and bad shows. It all comes with the territory. And you just keep working to the most and best of your ability at all times.
You almost have to learn to forgive yourself if you're not perfect.
Exactly.
Can you tell us briefly what a rehearsal director does?
There's 5 of us in this company, and we have to make sure that we know all the choreography so that we know that the dancers are doing the correct choreography and rehearse them, make sure that they're in the right place at the right time, and hopefully have a little bit of time for maybe coaching and pulling a little bit more out of them.
But you have to know all the choreography. How do you do that? I mean, you have to know everyone's role.
Yes and no. You have to have a really good idea of the whole picture. And some roles, like roles that I physically danced, they're pretty much in the body. I know those ones inside out. Ones that I did not are less in my body, and I take as good a notes as I can so that I have something to reflect back on. If the choreographer was specific about a certain thing that he wanted, I made sure that I had that in my notes so that that doesn't get lost. As long as you have something to look back on, having a general overview is really good. And also the dancers are really good at remembering what they have to do.
You use video too?
Oh, yes. A lot of video. My phone is full of dance videos.
Can you talk about muscle memory? I mean, you're coaching. Is it still in your body? Do you know, you hear the music and you're, without thinking, your body knows the part?
Sometimes. Certain ballets, certain choreographers tend to stick. A lot of Balanchine tends to really stick because it's incredibly musical. I know that I've heard music and I can't place it, and my body starts doing the steps. Oh, I think it was this, but and it takes me a while to remember what it was, but my body knows.
The legendary British ballerina Margot Fonteyn said, "Great artists are people who find the way to be themselves in their art." But that's not easy, is it, to find the confidence to be yourself in ballet? Because often classical dancers must conform to an ideal.
That's a tricky question, or statement, I should say. I feel like there were times when there was a role that might have intimidated me. And in that case, I would pretend to be somebody else because that made it easier. Oh, well, that person could handle it. No problem. I'm that person today. And sometimes that would get me over the hump. Maybe it was a technical difficulty or even just the, no, I guess technically, that's the scary part. Being a character, I found incredibly fulfilling. But similarly to the way that she thought, I've always found classicism to be the most difficult to achieve, really pure classical ballet. And I feel like if a dancer can find their own freedom within the classical shape, which it sounds weird, but if they can be comfortable and find the beauty in the pure classical, then I think it's easier to do anything. You can go beyond much easier than you can to come back and still be real and not stiff or fake. So it's kind of it's a funny thing.
But what is it about classical ballet that gives one the ability to handle almost any other dance form? That's not true in the reverse. So if you're classically trained, you can look at our dancers, how they perform contemporary works.
Again, I think it's because it's easier to let go. Classical ballet has a certain shape, a certain look, a certain way to do things, and you might think of it differently than the next person because the next person has a different body, but ultimately that shape, there's a correctness to it that that needs to happen when you're dancing. And that's it's a discipline that is hard. It's harder than being able to just let go and feel it a little bit differently or further than the next person.
If you're just joining us, I'm Claire Sheridan, and I am speaking with San Francisco Ballet rehearsal director and former principal dancer, Tina LeBlanc. And in a short while, we'll be able to take some questions so you can be thinking about those. Okay, let's talk now about today's program. We are seeing three ballets this afternoon, and a common thread between them could be that they all acknowledge the creators of art, whether it be poetry, Rumi, the poet, and Gateway to the Sun, that's the first ballet, music, the composer Stravinsky in Violin Concerto, or theater, a circus clown in Madcap. So let's start with the first ballet, Gateway to the Sun, choreographed by Nicholas Blanc. Tina, you worked on this piece as rehearsal director. What would you like us to know about this ballet?
It's quiet. It's beautiful, but it is very quiet. And the role of the poet, it's not a story per se. I think you can kind of make up your own story as it goes along, because the way that I see it is very different than other interpretations that I've heard from other people within our organization. So I think you can kind of read into it what you want, but it is, he was inspired by Rumi. He was also inspired by the music that he used, Anna Klein. And each section came with a line of, I guess you could call it poetry, it's just one line of what she felt this music represented, which he somehow tied in his mind to Rumi. So, hopefully you'll enjoy it. I think it's beautiful.
How would you describe the movement?
You know, I think you'll see contemporary, very contemporary throughout this day. Well, Stravinsky a little less so. There's definitely ballet steps, but watching the choreographer, Nick, move, he had this incredible sinewy, I like to say gooey, it's not a technical term, way of moving that was so fascinating to watch. And he put that in his choreography. I think always does. This is the only experience I've had with him hands-on, but I think he tried to put the way he moves into his ballet.
So there's the main character, the poet, and there's 12 other dancers who, the program says, represent the words and emotions that inspire the poet to write. So you kind of feel this swirling of other dancers representing words and emotions. Okay, Violin Concerto, choreographed by Yuri Posokov, who decided to approach this famous Stravinsky score in a new way. And there's a standout character in this piece called the Muse, and she wears a pink tiered skirt. It's Sasha Mukhamedov dances that role today. Any comments, Tina, about Violin Concerto that might help us see the ballet more clearly?
It's incredibly musical, much like Balanchine's version. I'm not sure if he gave Balanchine a nod, but obviously you'll see he gave Stravinsky a huge nod. I mean, it seems to be all about celebrating the composer.
But originally, Balanchine choreographed to this very same score.
A very famous piece of
very
Balanchine.
Famous.
It was very courageous of Muri to do that.
Did you ever dance in that piece?
No, I did not.
But you danced Balanchine.
Many.
And finally, Madcap by Danny Rowe. This ballet explores the inner life of a performer, specifically the life of a clown in a decrepit circus. All you people who are afraid of clowns, beware. It's not a traditional ballet, is it?
Not at all. I found it fascinating. I was in love with it from the first time I saw it. And so when I heard that some audience members were very upset with it, I didn't really understand because I find it incredibly fascinating.
Can you talk a little bit more about, like, this clown, the character?
Well, you'll see, when the curtain opens, you're watching him from the back. Like, you are backstage. And he's finishing up a show, and what happens after that is what we're going to see. It's the performance that you know what it is. It's creepy and theatrical and very creative, very creative.
You know, the clown is someone who keeps performing even though the world doesn't care. Maybe he's so wedded to one identity that he can't imagine himself doing anything else. And it's something I think we can all relate to at some point in our lives where we have these transitions, you know, empty nest syndrome, or you change your career, especially for dancers who grow up as a performer and then have to make this transition. You want to talk a little bit about this transition that dancers must face in their lives?
I found it difficult, but I'm still involved so deeply. I went into teaching, which I had done while I danced almost my entire life, so that was nothing new. But I found that a new fascination, even though I miss performing terribly. I found a new fascination with teaching young dancers more how to get more out of their bodies, how to push themselves, try to give them everything that I learned, hoping that, you know, things that I learned late in my career, if I gave them to the dancers while they're young, maybe they'll go that much farther, you know, but everybody learns at their own pace, so I don't know if I made that difference. But yeah, it was just, it's hard to step down when there's such a thrill. I mean, they're to perform in front of that many people, and especially when you've done something very difficult and you feel like you've done it well, it's a high that no drug can give you. It's really wonderful feeling.
You know, one thing that's true with any San Francisco ballet performance, and that is it takes a village. Tina, can you talk about some of the backstage support that we don't see, especially the stage crew?
Well, yes. I mean, the orchestra, which you do see and you hear, but they're a little bit less visible than the, what you're seeing on the stage. We have a lot of crew back there, like our wonderful young gentleman who instructed us. I'd never even seen him before. He works here. there's a lot of crew members in the back from, you know, with our props and our carpentry and our lighting and our the sound crew. It involves a lot of people. Then you talk about wardrobe and all the people downstairs that I don't know that are fixing the costumes that, you know, might need fixing or taking them in, the people that make the costumes. I mean, it goes on and on. It's a huge amount of people that go into each production that you see.
And everyone's job is critical. You know, I was watching after a company class that the dancers take class on stage, and then afterwards the folks come and they mop the floor very carefully. And if one of them screws up and leaves a slippery spot, during the show, somebody could slip on that and their kneecap goes exploding into the, you know, into the wings, and there goes the show. So everybody's job is so important. If Romeo doesn't have his sword, you know, where is it? Where's the prop guy? Everyone's job is so important. It just runs so beautifully.
We hope.
There's some stories you could tell, but what does it feel like to be up on stage performing? Specifically, what do you see? Can you see people in the front row? Can you?
It's very dark. I mean, we see the exit signs and small lights. You can sometimes see outlines of people, especially in the front rows, because of the light spilling from the orchestra pit. But I certainly never concentrated on that because I didn't like to know people were watching. I know that sounds so silly, but it made me nervous to think that people were watching. So it was a black hole. The less I could see, the better for me.
Do you communicate with the conductor at all during a performance? Do you say, look at him like, not so fast? Or
In our dreams. In our dreams, we might be, a glaring look might tell him what it's too fast or too slow. But no, it's we look at the conductor for a starting beat, maybe, or yeah, that would pretty much be it. Sometimes he has to watch the dancer for a starting point, and sometimes we have to watch him.
Okay, now we're going to go to some fun questions. Is there a dancer or choreographer from the past who you want to interview?
That's a really good question. I think, it's somebody who's passed, but there was a piece that I did at the Joffrey called The Green Table by Kurt Yost, and I think I'd want to talk to him. And yeah, I think he must have led a fascinating life.
You can talk a little bit more. The Green Table is an anti-war ballet.
Anti-war, I guess it's always relevant. It's an amazing piece that starts with, it's literally a green table, and it's a little bit slanted so you can see all the way up, people sitting on both sides, and they're wearing masks so that they look like older politicians, and they're arguing over what's going to happen and how to proceed, and obviously they decide on war. So once the green table, the next scene, you see all the different slices of life that it has affected, from the old man called back and his old wife watching him go, the young man and the mother who's saying goodbye, the mercenary who doesn't go to war but makes money off of it, and a central figure of death that is incredibly powerful, and how death takes each person very differently, but he doesn't want the mercenary. And then it ends up back at the table with the politicians, how many lives these 12 people have affected. It's brilliant.
Wow. Another one. What does your ideal day off look like?
You know, I thought about this. I don't think I could say what my ideal day off would be because there are so many things that I like to do, whether it be, you know, taking a hike or going to Fort Funston with the dogs or being in the kitchen baking or doing some crafts or sitting in front of the TV watching movies. It could be any of those and I'd be happy.
Do you cook?
Yeah, but my husband's more of the cook. I'm the baker.
Ah.
Or candy maker.
Have you had a worst nightmare on stage?
Several.
Tell us.
From getting my costume stuck on my partner twice. Same ballet, different spot. Finishing 32 fouettés and being very relieved that they were over and taking two steps and falling flat on my face. Many falls, many stories about falling. Missing an entrance because my costume wasn't, like I wasn't dressed yet. It was a fast change and I didn't make it. I ran on late and pretended like I knew where I was in the music.
Okay, what did you do when your costume got stuck? I guess the lace of his sleeve got caught in your tiara or something.
The lace of my bodice got stuck on his button. So we were face to face. And he, as I pulled back to him because we couldn't go any farther, he ripped it apart, which just added more passion. But as far as the late entrance, I was finishing up my costume, we were on tour, and I had a different quick change lady who maybe wasn't used to it, and all of a sudden I heard my music. And that I have many nightmares about this, too, many anxiety dreams. And I, instead of coming from the back like I was supposed to, I didn't have time to get to the back of the stage. I ran on from the side just as the last people were exiting. So it was fairly good timing. But in my panic, I had no idea where I was in the music. And so I just kind of faked it for a little while until I could figure it out. But yeah, many nightmares.
I think that's a classic dancer nightmare where you're in a theater, and you hear your music, but you can't find the stage. And you're like running around.
Your shoes.
Right.
Or no makeup.
Oh,
and then, of course, the biggest nightmare was when I went down with my knee in the first act of Don Q, tore my ACL. And my memory of it is very, very different than what's on the video. Because in my mind, it was all slow motion. I was very calm. Not at all. I saw the video and I was like, oh, that was rather obvious, wasn't it?
Well, that's a very serious injury. You have a right to be not calm. Okay, looking at the rest of the season, what other ballets are you working on right now?
So this past week up through Friday, it was all about these two programs on the stage these 2 weeks. It was all about getting them on and getting their other cast, second cast, third cast, get them all prepared. As of Monday, we go back to Mere Mortals and Swan Lake to get those back on for their second viewings.
Okay, folks, it's question time. Yes, sir. Also, please, everyone, if you could speak loudly so we can hear you and make your questions succinct, because I do need to repeat them. Thank you, sir. That's a great question. If you know one version of a ballet and then you were invited to guest with another company that has a slightly different version, how do you make that transition? How do you keep the two ballets straight?
When you're talking about a full length, I guess it would depend on how much it varies, because if it's based on a traditional version, then to change little things might not be such a big deal. Or even like Helgi's Swan Lake, it's pretty traditional until the last movement, the last act. So somebody might come in and only have to actually learn a small portion of it. If it's the pas de deux, you might be able to do what you always knew. The interactions with other people might be a little bit different. So it's not that difficult if it's a classical work, I found, because I was trained classically. So that kind of stuff is in my body. Now, if you're talking about something like Stravinsky Violin Concerto, and it's an entirely different ballet, that might be more difficult. But once you start, we spend 2 to 3 weeks learning a new piece. So it should be okay. You still remember. I know like Katita Waldo. She's one of our rehearsal directors as well, and she did Balanchine's Stravinsky Violin Concerto. And so her body wants to do that naturally. Luckily, she didn't have to do the new one. I don't know how many of these dancers actually have done the other one. So, but again, once you start working with a choreographer and you get it in your mind and you're rehearsing it, it's not as difficult as you would think.
This is about Gateway to the Sun. How much time did it take to learn the ballet, and how much time did it take to bring it back?
Right. So we had 3 weeks to put it all together, and that's pretty average. When we do a new piece, they try to give, especially a big piece, you know, because it has quite a few people in it. If it's a smaller piece, it might need less time. And because it was a new commission, new choreography, we have 3 weeks to learn it in and for him to work. Choreographers, I find, like to finish or be almost finished by the second week, end of the second week, so that by the third week they can be cleaning or changing it, kind of refining it. And then, of course, we shelve it. We put it away until it's time to pull it out for the season. Second year around, we get much less time. It's more like hours here and there to remember it, so a lot less time to put it together. Yep.
Wouldn't that be hard for the dancers who are dancing it for the first time?
Most definitely. Most definitely. But hopefully, if they weren't involved in it the year before, then hopefully they've at least seen it, or maybe they have to study a little harder.
I find that dancers are incredibly smart, and they know how to behave in a stressful situation. They keep their cool, and they learn fast. I've worked with dancers getting a college degree, and they are like the best students in the class. They're very smart. So, as rehearsal director, do you ever have a role in casting?
Yes. We can make suggestions. If it's core, like when we're talking about second and fourth act Swan Lake, we kind of do that ourselves, and then it gets okayed by the director. If it's a bigger part, we can make suggestions, but again, everything basically has to cross Tamara's desk, and she has to give it the stamp of approval.
Well, folks, it's that time. We need to wrap it up, so please join me now in thanking our guest today, San Francisco Ballet's rehearsal director and former principal dancer, Tina LeBlanc.
Thank you.
Enjoy the show.
Thank you for listening to San Francisco Ballet's Meet the Artist. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. To learn more about SF Ballet or to attend in-person Meet the Artist interviews and performances, visit sfballet.org. See you at the ballet.